the opportunity to participate in this symposium. So we'll pretend that Super Weeds is actually in this title, because we're gonna talk about some controversy and passion. So in this slide, you can see there's a problem in this cotton field. This is Northwest Alabama, and that is herbicide-resistant Palmer amaranth. That's about a two-acre spot in this field, and likely after it was harvested, with how the seeds are tiny and how they persist in cotton lint and ginning materials, it was probably distributed throughout this field. Just want to mention, there's scientists from my laboratory in Auburn, Alabama, in three groups that are present at this meeting. I'm in the conservation systems group. There's a climate change group looking at carbon dioxide effects on plants and systems, and the waste management group. So, moving on to controversy and passion. If you're thinking about a cotton grower spending between $400 and $600 on a bag of cottonseed that's going to plant between 4 and 5 acres, and the technology that it has in it for all different types of pests, including weed management, I would think that calling a weed that is resistant to that, if it's your major issue in that field, could be potentially a super weed. However, as I'll show you in a minute, that is controversial. But I thought this was a cool thing. So, passion. Weed scientists are passionate. And this email was put out there by the Weed Science Society of America a couple weeks ago, a white paper that scientists put together to tell you that these are not super weeds, because if you take them out of the context of their herbicide resistance capability and you put them side by side in an experiment, they're not going to grow any faster, they're not going to produce more weed seed and other attributes. They're equivalent plants other than the fact that they can resist herbicide resistance. So again, these are passionate scientists, I would state. Okay, so this is a picture from some of my colleagues in Georgia where the resistant Palmer amaranth originated in 2005. And you can see how fast this plant can grow. Do you call this super? Or do we drop it from the title to please our co-authors? Who may be in the room? Is Bob Nichols in the room? I didn't think I've not seen him yet at this meeting. So 4 inches in 52 hours, half an inch over 12 hours. If you're using ignite-tolerant cotton, the recommendations or guidelines on the label state that you have to make your application before this weed is 4 inches tall. So if you have hundreds or thousands of acres of cotton and you're managing this in the southeast where we get, you know, rains fairly frequently in the summer, and you may not be able to get in the field timely, you can imagine this may be a super problem. So challenge. Is this a challenge? This is a cotton field. This is Stanley Culpepper, Extension Weed Specialist, University of Georgia. This field's bush hogged. Okay? Went on a field tour, and the topics range from intensely managed fields where weed management costs $100 an acre, conservation systems where there weren't problems because managers were extremely proactive and what I would consider drivers of the conservation systems community, to should we put this into pine trees, which is an option in the southeast. So here's Palmer. Again, just an extremely common weed throughout the United States, and there's resistant water hemps that are very similar in their growth and within the same genus. They can produce 500,000 seed per plant. They're one of the most efficient plants in the world as far as carbon. Here's another. This is glyphosate-resistant horseweed. This is some plots I had this spring following some work I did with some of the new 2,4-D and dicamba technologies that will come out in some of our row crops. And there were actually plots in here where we had 100% control early in the spring. So that would have been maybe in March. This is June, and you can see what things can look like. And annual ryegrass, which is a problem I know out here in California. There's glyphosate-resistant Italian ryegrass we have in nearby Mississippi and will likely be a problem in the U.S. So again, is this a super weed? Is this controversial? So I'm on Facebook. I'm with ARS. I'm friends with the USDA, so I can see what different things are posted. So here's a post that the USDA put out this summer. USDA unveiled a new brand of one-stop shop for new beginning farmers. So this is probably an FSA type of thing. And you can read down the comments. One of them is, ban GMOs. How about if you don't approve the new Agent Orange herbicide? So this is looking at the 240 and Enlist technologies that are coming out. Okay, Dr. Delgado mentioned a paper that we published earlier in 2011 in the Journal of Soil and Water Conservation looking at this problem and a challenge to conservation tillage. You can see that red bars in the back, that's the increase in glyphosate that we've used in our row crop systems. This is in soybean. The other modes of action you can see have decreased. But on the flip side of that, if you look at the history of conservation tillage adoption, it mimics the red bar, because the tools that those systems provided helped us initiate and farmers participate in conservation tillage. So it's kind of a chicken or the egg deal here with that. Here's a map of glyphosate resistance in the U.S. and the different weeds that are present in different areas. It's not just the southeastern problem. It's not a midwestern problem. There's a problem. There's a lot of different opportunities and challenges here. So conventional agriculture, if we're thinking about, you know, I should skip down to this slide first. So this is the University of Georgia recommendation slide for control of Palmer amaranth. This would be also similar in North Carolina, Alabama, parts of Tennessee, mostly along the coastal plain, and up the Mississippi-Tennessee River valleys. Start clean, irrigation, tillage. Controversy. I've been to a conservation tillage program in Georgia where tillage was discussed as the solution for this problem, and a producer in the back stood up and totally dressed down the speaker. I mean, it was embarrassing. You didn't want to be in the room when this happened. And as a scientist, you think of, you know, weed biology, weed ecology, possible solutions to problems, and then you think about passion, the producer. You know, we're in areas down in the southeast where we have a 0.5% organic matter. If you get up to 1.5-2%, you're talking extremely cared for soils, because in general, because of our rainfall and our history of farming. So you can imagine these producers, when they're told to do some tillage, get very passionate. So with that, though, you can bury weed seed. You can get increased herbicide activity with pre-emergence and incorporated herbicides, and then other benefits to producers that, you know, if you're not familiar with high residue conservation. So I showed you the picture of the field earlier where you can either bush hog a field. This is what is much more common in the southeast. So in 2004, you saw a little bit of hand weeding in fields. Today, if you go out along the coastal plain in areas where you have a lot of high densities of herbicide-resistant weeds, You see migrant workers out loading trailers full of weeds that will be removed from the field so they don't set seed. They're either put in ditches, burned, just gotten out of the field. So there's an opportunity for some studies there and where these weed seeds end up. Tillage has increased. It's a fact in the Southeast. So in places, some states we've gotten, 50% of our land in conservation tillage, maybe 7 to 20% adoption of cover crops. And this is pushing those numbers down. So conservation tillage, one of the solutions. One of the solutions that different people in the, throughout the U.S. and what I work in is the potential that cover crops, this isn't new, can help you decrease the selection pressure and decrease the density out there that we're working with as far as asking our herbicides to work against. Okay, so you've probably likely seen this before. This is a Brazilian-style cover crop system that we borrowed from the Brazilians. We're using our cover crop roller. This is Jimmy Brooks down in Atmore, Alabama. He's a cotton peanut producer. This is a roller that's 6 rows wide for his equipment. He's using a GPS to know where he's at in the field. He's going to come back through because he's on the coastal plain and do in-row subsoiling where the drill is going to run out of the planter. And once he does that, you won't be able to see where he's been through the field because the shanks he's going to use are not actually going to do much disturbance at all, just below ground disruption to take care of the hard pans that are there in the coastal plain soil types. And again, come back with his GPS and know exactly where he's been and plant into this residue. So you can imagine that the weed biology, the weed ecology, is going to be extremely different in this system versus a conventional tillage system. And this is Mr. Lamar Black. He's the founder of the Georgia Conservation Tillage Alliance, who was one of the kind of first people to adopt these practices, these Brazilian-style practices in the Southeast. So again, we have our winters are such, our rainfall is such, this is the type of cover crops that we're growing and are able to grow and manage with the machinery that are available today. I thought this was really interesting, quote by Ball in 92. So we were talking pre-GMO, pre-controversy, passion about that type of stuff. Recognition that reduced tillage accelerates buildup of seed of weed species less susceptible to applied herbicides points to the importance of maintaining acceptable levels of weed control in reduced tillage systems beyond that necessary in systems utilizing millboard plowers. It is also likely that development of herbicide-resistant weed populations will be more rapid in reduced tillage systems due to the potential for rapid seed bank increases when control can't be maintained. And I will attest that this has happened. This is some work that Dr. Wayne Reeves and Mike Patterson did in South Alabama before I came on in the 2003. They were looking at black oats, wheat, and rye compared to a winter fallow system. It was peanuts, soybeans, and cotton in rotation. And what they were seeing was just the huge amount of reduction in biomass and density of weeds and very aggressive weeds. You can see these picture here. This is a non-treated plot in black oats. And you can't see the cotton in those rows due to the palmer amaranth that is in these plots. And the only difference is this particular plot, they were just beginning to use no-till in a high residue system. They mounted their cleaning spider wheels backwards, and so actually when they went through to plant, moved the residue too far and actually did a little tillage. So this is like a classic weed ecology slide here to show you what tillage and residue disturbance can do as far as weed germination. This is a slide showing some response surfaces from some work we did in Auburn, where we did different planting dates and termination dates in the spring. Basically, what we found was obviously not rocket science in the fact that the earlier you spring sow your cover crop and the later you terminate them. And this was for both rye and clover. You get more biomass. I guess we were really surprised on the surface on the right with the highest amounts of residue, how few weed densities, how much lower our weed density was in our biomass. And so again, trying to reduce our selection pressure of the glyphosate resistance or the newer technologies that are going to be coming out. This is, you know, the direction that one of the things that we could be doing as far as trying to minimize the likelihood of either that problem spreading or that challenge spreading or new ones. Here's another project that followed that one up where we had, again, different planting dates up here on the top graph. We had an early, a mid, and late based on a frost date. And then we had conventional tillage and winter fallow. And this conventional tillage, we actually just did surface tillage because we had no idea at the time that people would actually bring more board plows back out to take care of the herbicide resistance. And so you can see we got a stair-step response, which we expected in the amount of cover we had, biomass. And then on the right axis, the black is representing the density, and you can see the worst place to be is winter fallow, which just happens to probably be the most prevalent form of conservation tillage we have. So getting back to what Egli's quote was, you know, we're producing all the seed, we're dropping it on the surface, we're not burying it with tillage, we're not burying it with cover crops, we're affecting it with the subsequent allelopathy, and while they are getting weather, they're likely getting preyed on by lots of different things in the field. There's just more of them there in those systems to deal with our herbicides. So as you can see, even in late in the season on the second one, we would much rather like to have our herbicide systems, whatever they are, or even an organic system, you know, we'd rather be hoeing the weeds out of your organic squash under those densities rather than the higher ones. So some of our work is trying to, you know, look at what if we're having to do tillage, and we think that with our high residue cover crops combined with current technologies that we do not have to do inversion tillage. However, that's controversial. There's people who say that that's the only way we're going to fix this problem. We did do some work with a conservation innovation grant in Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, in South Carolina, where we put these out in very large pots and hope to submit this to the Journal of Water Quality soon. And, of course, what we want to end up with is some recommendations. We want NRCS to pick up our recommendations from this research, things that we give out at field days ourselves, and then producer universities throughout the Southeast, so that producers have alternative solutions besides full-on tillage. So with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Like, it is a very interesting topic because I think we want no tillage, but this is a challenge. So,
Doug. Andrew, following up on where you were ending there, one of the questions would be if, with the need for bioenergy and different feedstocks,
Mm-hmm.
What happens in a forage crop in the
Sure. I think to Doug's question, that more intensely managed systems generally have good weed management in those. There is, I think, opportunity to harvest some of these winter cover crops for biomass. I think depending on what your system needs are, if you're trying to build organic matter, obviously that would be slowed by taking residue off. If you're trying to control weeds with that residue, then that challenge might be increased. I presented this poster at a biomass meeting where we proposed, why not use Palmer as the biomass source, because you have a Roundup resistant crop per se that has a very high biomass, and other folks have, you know, tried using it in their kitchen. So, you know, I think there's a very diverse solutions and opportunities in the Southeast for sure. So, thank you.